Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're looking at the third in a series of shows with a very level-headed psychiatrist who's really helping us reconnect with traditional Native values when it comes to mental health. His name is Dr. Daniel Bynus. He runs a practice called Beautiful Minds Medical in Northern California. And he's really helping us sort through some of the cutting-edge medical science that's telling us that Native American practices throughout history really have some profound insights into mental health that we can utilize today. Daniel, it's great to have you back with us in the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
We've been speaking about a lot of things that relate to lifestyle. And in today's show, Dr. Bynus, you and I have spoken about something that, again, brings up this whole issue of paradox. We want to speak about things that people do for fun. We want to talk about entertainment and some of the subtle ways that that is robbing us of our mental health. Set the stage for us. Why would someone even ask such a question?
Well, that's a very important question. We talked a little bit on previous shows about how the brain works, and it's extremely important to understand some of these basics for it to even make sense of why entertainment would be a factor in people's mental health.
Well, I think we should recap, because we've got listeners who are tuning in all the time who may not have caught the first two installments of our interviews together. So give us a little bit of that basic brain science so we can understand the dimensions here.
So I want to do it a way that anyone can understand and not bore everyone here to death. So what I want to do is just divide the brain into two main parts that we're going to be concentrating on. And the first part that I wanted to touch on is the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is located right behind the forehead. It's the forebrain and the most developed part of the brain. And it is the part that really differentiates us from animals like monkeys or dogs or any other animal. And the frontal lobe is responsible for reasoning, for thinking, for concentration and judgment. It's kind of like the president of the brain. The other part of the brain that I wanted to talk about is the limbic system, which is the center for emotion. And this part of the brain is responsible for feelings like anger, sadness, even joy. So these two parts of the brain interact very closely. And the frontal lobe normally helps to regulate the emotional part of the brain. For example, if I get really angry and I feel like punching someone in the head, my frontal lobe will say, wait, don't do that, mm-hmm. because you might actually get in trouble and have to go to jail if you get in a fight with this person or something else could possibly happen. And so if my frontal lobe is working properly, it will be able to inhibit that anger enough so that I won't actually act on the anger and get myself in trouble.
I mean, this is a good thing, because if we were all acting on our emotions, it would be a very different world, wouldn't it?
That's right. That's right. And the problem becomes then when in almost every mental health disorder, including depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, ADHD, there is a malfunction of the frontal lobe, and there is too much activity in the limbic system.
So always too much activity in the limbic system.
Most of the time there's too much activity in the limbic system. There, that might not be always true for schizophrenia, but in general, yes, there's too much activity in the limbic system and there's not enough activity in the frontal lobe.
So the basic strategy that we've talked about in previous shows is things that we can do simply to enhance frontal lobe function and help it regain the control over the emotional part of the brain.
That's right. And we're not saying that emotions are bad. Emotions are a very good thing. If we didn't have emotions, life would lose that depth of meaning and would become quite boring, honestly. But the problem is when emotions begin to control our lives. And so in previous shows, we talked a little bit about how selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are medications like Prozac and Celexa and others, will work on that emotional part of the brain to decrease the activity there, and that will then allow the frontal lobe to have a fighting chance. Now, there's a couple issues with that that are not optimal. And again, I want to repeat that some of these medications are good and they can be necessary and helpful in certain situations, but they're not getting to the root of the problem, mm-hmm. and that's one of the issues. The other issue that people often complain about to me is they say, you know, I just don't have the emotions. I feel kind of numb. I don't have the emotions that I used to before I was on the medication.
One of the things that we talk about in Indian country sometimes is cultural trauma, and a popular diagnosis that we haven't really mentioned in this series is PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder. Sometimes people with that condition are often talking about this emotional numbness. Is that somehow also affecting the limbic system?
Yes, actually, that's very similar. PTSD is actually in the category of anxiety disorders. And as such, the limbic system would be very much hyperactive, and it would be impacting the ability of the frontal lobe to function properly. And so, like we've talked on previous shows, and we want to talk more about today, things that help to enhance the function of the frontal lobe would help PTSD as well as all of these other disorders, and it would actually help to get more to the root of the problem and actually help heal the disorder rather than just treating symptoms.
So what's exciting to me about our whole dialogue today as well as in past shows is it doesn't actually take a brain scientist or a psychiatrist to have to specifically diagnose all the nuances of the disease. I'm not saying that isn't important. I'm just saying you don't have to figure all this out before you know the optimal lifestyle strategies. The lifestyle strategies are really very similar regardless of the mental disorder that you have.
That's right. And the amazing thing is that even if people don't have a mental disorder, these things can be very beneficial for optimizing brain function. And so for someone who wants to improve their quality of life, or maybe do better in school, or be a better mom or a better dad, or whatever it might be, these principles will help with that.
So let's move into this area then of entertainment, because a lot of people, Dr. Bina, say, listen, one of the things that keeps me on an even keel mentally is I've got my favorite shows that I watch, or I do some things on the internet, or certain music that I listen to. Are we in the mental health field coming to understand the impact of these things? Are they as beneficial to our minds as some people think?
Well, the unfortunate truth is that they are actually doing a lot of damage to our minds and have really had a large mental health impact on a lot of people in recent years.
Now, let's just be very specific here. Let's talk about, for example, what some people would call entertainment television or entertainment viewing, whether it's on the internet or renting DVDs or going to the movie theater. A lot of people would say this is something that gives them a lot of pleasure and is a benefit to their mind. Are you saying that the evidence suggests even though people feel it's beneficial, it's not?
I would, in the big picture, that's what I'm saying. Let me use the internet first as an example. The internet is an important tool. And here we have one of those paradoxes where it almost everyone needs to use the internet, and yet at times it can also be detrimental to someone's mental health. There is a difference in using the internet as a tool and being addicted to the internet. And what they have found is that people that use the internet as a tool, in other words, for work and for email and that sort of thing, without having an addiction problem, there usually is no mental health issues associated with that. But once people develop an internet addiction, then there is actually an increased risk of depression. And they have done a large study actually over in China on college students, and they found that there was an increased risk of depression of at least 2 times above normal that in people that were addicted to the internet versus people that were not.
Well, let's make it practical, Dr. Bynes. How would someone listening right now tell whether they have an internet addiction or whether they're just using it as a tool?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked, because the symptoms of internet addiction are actually similar to any other addiction. And those would be symptoms like withdrawal, like feeling like you can't be without the internet for a certain period of time, that you're craving the internet, and maybe not being fulfilled and unless you can have a certain amount of internet time, and being irritable if you can't get on the internet, and spending long hours more than you might have planned on the internet. Mm-hmm. Those would be some of the symptoms to watch out for.
Would it also be the type of content you're using? Would that be something that would tip you off, or is that not an indicator of whether it's an addiction or just using it as a tool?
Well, I think we probably need to differentiate it a little bit, because there are different things that people do on the internet. And if for example, someone is watching TV online or playing video games online, this would be damaging, actually, and decrease the function of the frontal lobe. Like we were talking about the frontal lobe before, and that's something that would really need the function of the frontal lobe would really decrease if you are actually watching TV or playing video games online.
So whether or not I have an addiction problem with the internet, if I'm watching TV on the internet or if I'm turning on the set at home, that is going to have a negative effect on my frontal lobe typically?
That's right. And that's the amazing thing that we're finding about entertainment television, is that after about 60 seconds of watching entertainment television, the frontal lobe basically shuts down and the rest of the brain is still active. That means the limbic system, the emotional part of the brain, is still engaged with what's going on. The memory center is still engaged in taking in and storing what is coming up on the television. But the frontal lobe, the part that is actually the decision-making part, the rational part of the mind, actually shuts down in about 1 minute.
So does that mean then that we're not processing things typically? We're not using our judgment or reasoning?
For the most part, that's true. What actually happens is that there's a lot of information that is coming in and not really being processed, or there's not real meaning being attached to it. It's just coming in and then it's being stored. And it's actually similar to a very mild form of hypnotism. And so there's actually a couple of major problems with that. Number one, of course, like we've talked before, the frontal lobe will be disengaged, which if you don't use it, you lose it. So in other words, if your frontal lobe is on idle, on autopilot, then you're not going to be engaged, and it will be damaging for that.
I know you've got more insights on this subject, and some of you who are sitting on the edge of your chair wondering where Dr. Bynes is going with this. We've got some good news, some very practical things you can do to improve your mental health, and some surprising pitfalls, as you've been learning, We've got a lot more to come in today's edition of American Indian Living. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Wimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Wimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Wimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Wimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people and full of people. For the people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Bynes on today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose, and we're looking at things that we can do to improve our mental health. We've been speaking with Dr. Bynes in previous shows. This is actually the third in a series of programs we're doing with this young psychiatrist from Northern California who's been really giving us some very practical insights into how we can optimize our brain function. In this program, we're especially speaking about entertainment and how some of the things that we think are helping us cope and do better on a mental level from a scientific basis are really pulling us down. Daniel, of course, First Nation peoples and peoples of every race throughout the globe 100 years ago were not sitting in front of the television or the internet, so a lot of these challenges really are modern-day challenges to our mental health, aren't they?
That's right, and unfortunately, I think it's actually been something that has caused quite a bit of isolation in our society, mm-hmm. which is a whole separate issue, but you know, we used to spend time talking more to each other, and rather than going home and just sitting in front of the TV, actually having conversations with other members of the family or friends. And I think that some of that is being lost and really causing more isolation. And I'm seeing a lot of people that don't have the social skills and that are also very lonely.
Mm. I mean, I think that's a tremendous observation. We know in the physical medical field that social connectedness, having these supportive relationships especially, is very important for physical health. I'm sure they've probably looked at the same thing in the mental health arena.
That's right. It's actually extremely important. When people are socially isolated and they don't have that support, it makes it much more likely that they will develop mental health issues. And even for people that do develop mental health issues, if they can connect into a social support network, that can be extremely helpful for them to get better and get the help that they need.
Tremendous. So we're talking about television and viewing things on the internet, movies, TV type shows, and you've mentioned a phrase that, in fact, I've mentioned it as well, entertainment television. When we speak about that in medical circles, Dr. Bynes, how is that different from other types of programming?
Well, entertainment television, patients often ask me, what do you mean by that? And basically, what I mean is the kind of television where it's moving from one scene to the next fairly rapidly. Most people that have been around for at least 10, 20 years have noticed that in the last 20 years, television has gotten much more rapid. I don't know if you've noticed that over the last decades or not.
I haven't made any study of it and haven't even thought about it. But I when I started hearing about this, I started looking, you know, sometimes I'd be in someone's home or whatever, because we're not really much when it comes to viewing television. And I would notice how even a slow-moving story, so to speak, they keep changing the camera angles and everything. So it's giving this sense of movement, even when someone might say, well, I'm just watching a relaxing show. It's just about a family or something like this.
That's right. It's actually been amazing. Over the last 26 years, they did a study with Sesame Street, for example, and they found that the pace of Sesame Street, the rate that the television camera would be shifting from one picture to the next, doubled in 26 years. And the reason for that is because it is nowadays taking people more of these camera shifts to actually stay engaged in the program and pay attention to the program. Back 30, 40 years ago, usually the television would stay focused on one person for several seconds and then move on to the next picture. Mm-hmm. But today, you see it often moving very rapidly from the picture of one person's face, and then maybe the camera will show a car pulling up to the house, and so it's constantly on the move, and that actually helps people to pay attention, because it's releasing a chemical messenger in the brain called dopamine, which is increasing the desire for people to pay attention to what they're watching.
So dopamine's going up, mm-hmm. but at the same time the frontal lobe is shutting down. How does that work?
So basically, we mentioned before, too, with some of these addictive substances, that when dopamine increases, then it can actually sometimes increase to the point where it shuts down the frontal lobe, and it also promotes the onset of addictive behavior as well. And moreover, with entertainment television, actually, all this information's coming in, and your brain can only take in so much information at one time. So you're kind of, if you think about the way your eyes look around at the environment, you were made to be able to process what you see. So you look at a tree and you see, okay, there's a tree, and then your eyes scan over and you see someone's face, and you can make sense of that. The amount of information that's coming in with the television is so much that your brain basically goes into overload, and your frontal lobe shuts down and gives up trying to attach meaning to what's going on, and it becomes passive. But all that information is still going in and being stored, and that's really the second major pitfall in entertainment television, in my view.
So we're talking about the frontal lobe shutting down, and yet the frontal lobe is the source of reasoning and judgment and morality. Yet when people are watching entertainment television, they're thinking things like, that's wrong, or he cheated him, or, you know, she's doing something that they shouldn't do, or that was good. They're making these moral judgments. So I'm just trying to piece together, how does that happen if the frontal lobe is somehow not being operative?
Well, basically, when I say that the frontal lobe is shutting down, I'm not saying that there is absolutely no activity going on in the frontal lobe. So we should probably be careful the way that we say that, and I appreciate that clarification. But to a large degree, people become much more passive, and the activity in the frontal lobe really does decrease. And so what's happening is, number one, the frontal lobe activity is decreasing, which obviously isn't good if you want to maintain your mental health. And number two, all this information is going in and being stored in the memory bank and engaging your emotion without you really critically evaluating what's going in there. And so that's an issue. And actually, if you think about it, people that make commercials realize this very well. And that's why they spend thousands and sometimes millions of dollars on commercials. I mean, most commercials, we don't actually remember. I remember very few commercials on television. And if these programmers were actually betting that we would remember the commercial, and that's why they were going to pay for the commercial, then they would be losing lots of money. But what they realize is that all that information is being stored. When we go to the supermarket and we're picking out, whether it's shoes or food or whatever it might be, that information that's stored is actually influencing our decision on which product to buy. Mm-hmm. And it's on an unconscious or subconscious level, which most people don't realize that's actually what our decisions are most heavily influenced by, is not the conscious reasoning, but our unconscious and subconscious mind plays a bigger role in our decision making than our conscious mind often does.
So this is why you're comparing it to a sort of hypnotism, because things are being put into the mind that we'll later act on that we would not have necessarily chosen otherwise.
That's right. So basically, all that is being stored, and then we go to the store and we're acting on this information that we probably wouldn't have otherwise chosen to buy this particular product.
So it sounds like those who are tuning in today are saying, well, here I finally see it, why Dr. DeRose has this fellow on his radio show. He's worked all this up in three programs, so he's going to bash TV and everyone from now on, we'll just listen to radio programming like American Indian Living. Is that the message that we're trying to convey here?
Well, I should probably say that Dr. DeRose actually did not pay me to say the things that I'm saying today. This is scientific evidence. And, you know, the main point is that there's a lot of other things that we can be doing to improve our mental health with some of those hours that we're spending watching television. And what I generally tell people is that if you are going to watch television, try to watch those programs which are going to be moving more slowly, like maybe some of those nature programs. If we all sat there and watched C-SPAN, which no one wants to do, our frontal lobes would actually not become disengaged unless we were just got bored to death. But the reason for that is because C-SPAN just stays on you know, focused on one angle, camera angle all the time. But once we start watching those entertainment programs, those ones that are moving very rapidly, that's what can really shut down the frontal lobe.
We have got to really make very serious decisions when it comes to our entertainment. We're going to find in our next segment that Dr. Bynus is going to help connect the dots, help us to see why some of the things that traditionally First Nation peoples have utilized for entertainment are superior choices, as well as some of the other challenges that we face today. You don't want to miss that segment, so don't go away. I'm Dr. DeRose.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
You're back with Dr. David DeRose and Dr. Daniel Bynes on American Indian Living. We're speaking today about mental health, especially as it relates to our entertainment choices. Some of the things that we're choosing that we think are helping us from a mental level, we're learning from Dr. Bynes, actually have some very serious downsides. Daniel, we've got some good news coming up, but before we move to the good news, some may still have some questions about what we've been talking about. They may say, well, I don't really watch that much television anyway, and the stuff I watch is not that stimulating. It just helps me relax and unwind at the end of the day. Couldn't that even entertainment television be actually helping me because I feel better after viewing these things?
Well, one of the interesting things about entertainment television is that while people are watching TV, they actually often do feel better. And they often feel less depressed, less anxious. But what studies have found is that immediately after the TV goes off, that their mood usually worsens. And they become more irritable, more anxious, and more depressed. And that is probably because they're switching from being in a passive mode while they're watching TV to actually being more engaged with life, and then their brain kind of almost switches back on, so to speak, but they have to face the reality of life again.
Wow. So even though we may be getting benefit during the time we're viewing, we may be feeling actually better, it's actually detrimental in the long run, most of the television programming we choose.
That's right, yeah, because it's actually decreasing the function of the frontal lobe, like we've mentioned, and it's also increasing the likelihood of becoming more irritable, anxious, and depressed.
So people who are tuning in should think they're fortunate if they only watch sporting events, because that would be a better choice. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, even sporting events have its downfalls. Even with sporting events, we often see that rapid movement from one camera angle to another, and that can usually shut down the frontal lobe just as well as most other programs.
Well, so what are you telling our listeners that they should do other than listen to radio instead of watch TV?
Well, there is good news. There's a lot of other wonderful activities to engage in, and I'd like to definitely mention some of those that are great for the mental health. One more word, though, on entertainment television is in regard to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and entertainment television. And one of the things I wanted to mention with that is that early TV exposure is actually associated with development of attentional problems. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is a nationally recognized organization that helps doctors to make decisions in regard to patient care, says that early exposure to television during critical periods of brain development is associated with these attentional problems. So they actually recommend absolutely no television for children under 2 years old, and then very limited television after that.
Wow, so kids who have not yet had their second birthday should not be watching television at all. That's the assessment of the American Academy of Pediatrics.
That's absolutely right. And I think part of the problem, too, is that even after 2 years old, a lot of children are actually spending a lot of time in front of the television, and they are not allowing other parts of the brain to develop through play, through going outside and doing these mm-hmm. things that children used to do. And that is part of the problem and reason that we're seeing so much ADHD today.
Well, I know one of the big issues has always been the connection with obesity and other bad habits, bad eating habits with television watching. Presumably some of that has to do with the time they're in front of the set, but then the eating choices may have to do more with the commercials, and not just commercials, but even what their heroes are involved with during the shows they're watching.
Yeah, that's true. Children are especially very heavily influenced by what's going on the television, and all that information is just going in, and it's not only going to be affecting their choices and what they're thinking in the here and now, but it's actually entraining long-term nerve pathways or ways of thinking in their brains that will really guide them for the rest of their lives. And that's a scary thing if we think about, wow, who's really training our children? Mm-hmm. Do we want the television to be training our children in issues like morality and in the way that they think about making their decisions and in what the choices they're making for their future?
Wow, these are some sobering questions. So what can we do? What kind of things, both for our kids, for adults, what are mentally improving entertainments or activities that we can be involved with in our leisure time?
Well, I think one of the most important things is going outside and getting some exercise, doing things like gardening, or maybe going on a jog, or playing games with each other. These are things that are really important, and they actually enhance the function of the frontal lobe rather than decreasing and damaging the frontal lobe and the mental health of people.
So instead of watching entertainment TV, maybe finding someone and playing a video game together, maybe online, someone across the country somewhere with that, is this what you're talking about?
Actually, that would, unfortunately, I'm going to have to burst your bubble on this one as well, Dr. DeRose, but video games are also another thing that have really been shown to decrease frontal lobe activity and actually be addictive at times, and that can, again, damage the mental health. So the kind of exercise that I'm talking about is actual physical exercise, aerobic exercise, where we're getting our heart rate up, or other activities like gardening, which can be exercise, but they can also be a cognitive activity where you're planning and you're thinking about how I can plant my garden and how I can water it and how I need to do this and that. Those all are very stimulating and helpful for the brain and can be really improve rather than damage the mind.
So what kind of games then would be things that would be good as a family to do or that wouldn't have this detrimental effect like video games?
Well, puzzles are often very helpful. Yeah, they actually really engage the brain when people put together jigsaw puzzles. Also, word games like Scrabble, where you have to put things together and think about how words might mix and match can be really helpful. So any kind of these games that require some thinking and some team play. So sometimes people even like to make up stories and act out stories, and these sorts of things can really engage not only the brain but also an enhanced social environment and team building, and help people to get more support from each other too.
Well, Dr. Bynes, we've been speaking together now. This is the third of a series of programs. We've spoken a lot about our lifestyle choices, the foods we eat. We've talked about physical exercise. We've talked about our beverages. We've talked about other addictive substances. And here today, speaking about entertainment. But I know as a psychiatrist, you do more than just point people in the direction of lifestyle therapies. You actually do some significant work with them. Sometimes it does involve medications. But I know one thing that I hear a lot more about when I look at the psychiatric literature, they're talking about therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy. That's kind of a hot term in many circles. But I find that many lay people still don't really know what we're speaking about when we mention CBT. Can you tell us a little bit about whether that's an important thing to use in mental health counseling and mental health treatment?
I really think it is important, and cognitive behavioral therapy, or otherwise known as CBT, is one of the best and most well-studied therapies that there are for mental health treatment. So one of the important things that people need to understand is all these other things we're talking about, like exercising well, getting optimal nutrition, not using substances that are harmful for the body, and minimizing entertainment, television, and video games. Those are all really important, but it's kind of, if you were driving a car, it would kind of be like those things would be stepping on the gas pedal. But you still got to steer the car. Mm. Otherwise, you're going to crash, right? And cognitive behavioral therapy would be like steering the car. And cognitive behavioral therapy helps you to actually steer your thoughts the right direction. Because oftentimes when people are depressed or anxious, they have what we call cognitive distortions, where they may be thinking thoughts that aren't 100% true and accurate.
So I think if you asked the average person, are your thoughts inaccurate, they would think that was kind of a strange question. They'd say, well, of course, I'm trying to think of what's true. Can you illustrate maybe some common problems that people get into with their thinking?
Well, let me give you an example. Someone who is depressed and they're walking down the street and they see their friend and they wave hi to their friend, and their friend, who they thought there was no problems, don't even acknowledge that they saw them. They don't even wave, nothing. Mm. Well, if that person is depressed, they may think, well, it's probably because I'm a loser and I'm not worth saying hi to anyway. And that person probably doesn't like me because I'm a worthless person. So they might think something along those lines. But the reality might be, there might be several other possibilities. Maybe they didn't actually even see that person. Mm-hmm, maybe they're having a really bad day themselves.
Okay.
Or maybe they're angry about something. So there's a lot of different options that could actually be taking place. But when people are depressed, they often jump to the worst case scenario or the darkest conclusion.
So how would CBT help someone like that?
Well, CBT basically helps people to take a look at their thoughts and monitor their thoughts and decide whether their patterns of thinking are accurate. In other words, in that situation, if you were doing CBT, then you'd take a step back and you'd evaluate, okay, is this 100% true? Do I have the evidence to say that I know that's what was going through that person's mind? Or am I, for example, my mind reading, which would be a cognitive distortion, that I can tell what's on people's minds? Or am I jumping to conclusions, which would be another distortion? And if you identify that maybe I am thinking a little bit distorted, then you can start to come up with alternative strategies and thoughts that might be more balanced and truthful.
Well, if this is a new concept for you, this cognitive behavioral therapy, we are going to give you some more information, some practical things you can do to improve your thinking and your steering, if you will. So you don't just get a better mental health by revving up your frontal lobe, but you can actually steer it better as well. That's what we'll be talking about in our final segment, so don't go away. I'm Dr. DeRose.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living Radio program is sponsored in part by Weimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Weimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Weimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Weimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Canned vegetables, bring them. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on. Help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I need water.
Sorry. Duncan!
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Okay, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just gonna have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
You're back with Dr. David DeRose and my guest today, Dr. Daniel Bynes. Daniel has been sharing with us for the last three programs, trying to give us some very practical things we can do to improve our mental health. He's helped us see that a lot of times we've got an imbalance at the brain level, and we need to improve that executive center, that control center of the brain, the frontal lobe. He's talked about how we can do that with diet, with exercise, by avoiding addictive substances. And now we've been talking, Daniel, about some ways to help steer that frontal lobe, to really help channel our mental energies in the right direction, and how many of us have these what we call cognitive distortions. Let me just ask this question as we pick the subject back up again. How do any of us know what anyone else is thinking? I mean, couldn't you say anything's a cognitive distortion if you don't tell me why you're doing something? And even if you do, I could question that you're telling me the truth or not, right?
Well, it's in a way, it can get a little dicey if you're trying to overanalyze things, and we don't want to do that. But what we want to do is make sure that we're having balanced and truthful thoughts. And a way of doing that is sometimes to bounce off our thinking on other people, talking to a friend that you respect, or sometimes a mental health counselor can be very helpful in guiding through this process, because sometimes especially when we're learning how to have more balanced thoughts, it doesn't always become obvious right from the beginning what is a more balanced or truthful thought.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know some people don't really know where to turn. You've been trying to make an effort to provide more internet-based resources on your website. How would someone tap into some of the things you've been pulling together on these practical mental health strategies?
Well, I'd certainly invite our listeners to visit our website at www.beautifulmindsmedical.com, where we do have some resources that can be helpful. And if there are some things that you have questions about that you can't find on our website, then you could send us an email and we would be happy to help you find more information on that.
Okay, so again, that website, Beautiful Minds Medical. In fact, that's the name of Dr. Bynus' practice in Auburn, California, Beautiful Minds Medical. If you just stick a .com on there, you'll get to his website. And if you can't get to the website and you're in Northern California, you can always pay Dr. Bynus a visit. Do you do a lot with cognitive behavioral therapy with your patients?
I do, and one of the main things that I encourage patients to do is to get a book to help them guide themselves through this process, because the goal is that each person becomes their own therapist, so to speak, so that they don't need someone like me anymore to help them through the process. And so there are a couple books that I generally recommend to people. One of those is SOS Help for Emotions by Dr. Clark. And he points out some very common distortions that people struggle with in their thinking process, and he helps guide you in knowing how to have more balanced thoughts. And then, like I said, sometimes it can be helpful to not only do the book, but to talk to a mental health counselor. But some people can actually just read the book on their own and do quite well that way.
I remember a friend that I had, and I had heard about that book through actually Dr. Nedley's program. You had mentioned some of Dr. Nedley's work in a previous show. And that was one of the books that he said really helped improve his outlook. I mean, he was a high-functioning person to begin with, but did have some struggles, I think, with depression. And that book, he said, was especially helpful. He never, to my knowledge, saw a mental health professional.
Yes, it certainly can be helpful even without a mental health professional. But sometimes when people are really down and out or having some real difficult distorted thinking problems, then it is important to get that professional help.
No, and I would second that. We're not trying to, even though you've been gracious and you come across Dr. Bynus of trying to get yourself out of business here, I guess you've got an awareness that there are plenty of mental health needs, so if one less person needs to see you, that's probably a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm always happy to say goodbye to patients on good terms and see them walk out the door when they're doing wonderful and they're healed. That's my favorite thing.
So you mentioned, I thought, more than one book. Is there another resource you
wanted to mention? There are a couple other books. There's one that's called Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy by Dr. David Burns. And there's another book called Telling Yourself the Truth by William Backus. Both of those books are also very good cognitive behavioral therapy books.
Okay, so a number of these resources. Is there a way, if someone can't remember all those books, do you have information about those on your website?
We do have information on how to find those books. We'll be putting the titles up on our website, so those will be available for you.
Okay, very good. So, Dr. Bynus, if someone says, look, books don't work well with me, just tell me some of the basic principles. Is there some things in a nutshell, not that we could expect in a few minutes to substitute for seeing a counselor or a psychiatrist or reading a book, but can you give something a little bit more tangible for someone to work with?
Sure. Let me give you a couple of examples of common cognitive distortions. And they've really identified 10, and there is some overlap in those categories, but one of those is called all or nothing thinking. Mm-hmm. And this is when you see things in black and white categories. And so if your performance is short of perfect, then you see yourself as a total failure.
Okay.
So In other words, let me give an example of a prominent politician that once said, because I lost the race for congressman, I am a big zero. And so that obviously is a case of all or nothing thinking. Mm-hmm. He was saying, because I lost the race for becoming a congressman, I'm nothing. Mm-hmm. I have nothing going for me. When in fact, he was quite an excellent professional. He had a good family. Mm-hmm. He had a good career. And that's what we often tend to do when we are really perfectionistic in nature. We will have these all or nothing thoughts.
And is there a danger on a mental level of just telling ourselves that, of saying something like, I'm a big zero? Does that have an influence itself, just articulating that?
Absolutely. It's amazing the way that our thought patterns really influence our mood. And in turn, our thought patterns actually influence our behavior as well. Mm. And the interesting thing, you know, we call it cognitive behavioral therapy. Well, the behavior also influences the thoughts too. So sometimes I tell people, well, I know you don't feel like going and exercising right now, and you don't even think that you might be able to do it. But if you go and do it, if you do the behavior, your thinking patterns will actually begin to change as well. And so that's the other part of cognitive behavioral therapy.
So for this guy who felt he was a big zero, is there a behavior he could do that would help adjust his thinking in addition to just talking with him and helping him realize that wasn't true?
That's a good question. I think that there probably would be several different things that he could do. He could go and engage in some of his regular work that he had done in the past, mm-hmm. and that would certainly be a reminder of, hey, you know, I can do this. This uh-huh. is something that I'm actually good at. Or he could go and engage in his family and with his family and realize that, you know, all of life doesn't revolve around my political desires, that I also have a family, and that's part of who I am as well.
So I don't know, do we have a time to sneak in one real quick additional cognitive distortion?
Let's try. So another one would be a mental filter, where you pick out a single negative detail and dwell on that exclusively, so that basically all you see is the negative. And one example of that might be people talk about seeing the glass of water half empty, seeing the negative of whatever you're noticing and basically filtering out the positive. So a depressed college student, for example, was hearing some students making fun of her best friend and conclude that everyone at the college was cruel. But actually, she forgot about all her friends that really enjoyed her as well.
Okay, well, it sounds like we do need to get some more of those resources if we want to explore CBT more. Give us your website once more where they can get that material.
BeautifulMindsMedical.com.
Okay, BeautifulMindsMedical.com. That's Dr. Daniel Bynes. That's his website. That's the name of his practice in Northern California as well. Hopefully, in this series of three programs, you've learned some very practical things that will help you have a more beautiful mind, not only you, but your family and your community as well. I'm Dr. David DeRose. For Dr. Bynes and all of us at American Indian Living, we hope this series of shows really contributed to your optimal health.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. We hope today's program has contributed to your living a healthy life. American Indian Living Radio is brought to you by the Native Education and Health Initiative in partnership with the Lifestyle Center of America and Life Talk Radio. American Indian Living is also distributed through the public radio satellite system by American Indian Radio on Satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications.